The time is 8 o'clock. Good morning, Willamette, and welcome to another day of live broadcasting here on CHLS 100.5 FM. My name is Jeff O'Kelly. This program is Snooze Button, and I will be with you until 9 o'clock. But hey, it won't just be me. Joining me in the studio this morning is Sarah Chandler. Good morning, Sarah.
Morning, Jeff.
Thank you. Your levels are just wonderful. That's great. We are going to be talking about restorative justice because this is Restorative Justice Week in Canada. Is that correct?
Yes, across the country.
All right, great. And you've been having some activities around that that we're going to get into a little bit later. Let's see. Let me first tell you what we were listening to, and then we will get back and talk with Sarah a little bit more. We just heard one of the caprices, or caprichos, as the name goes in Spanish, music by Mario Castelnuovo Tedesco, an Italian composer, but with Spanish and Jewish background. And he ended up moving to America, where he became well-known as a Hollywood composer. That capriccio, these caprichos are based on some drawings and etchings by Francisco Goya. And are you familiar with Goya's work, Sarah?
I'm not.
Okay, Goya, a Spanish artist in the latter part of the 18th century, he was, at least to judge by his art, someone who railed against injustice. And that's why I thought that we would start with his with music by him this morning. Many of his paintings show some suggestions of abuse of power, particularly by the powerful over the weak. However, that said, he also kind of his social criticisms are pretty broadly applied, and they sometimes apply to the lower classes as well as to the upper classes. That particular capriccio shows is based on an etching of Goya that shows a young woman sitting in a prison cell, and we have no idea what her crime was. The title given to the etching is simply "Because She Was Sensitive." And so it leaves a great sense of mystery about it as to what the story behind it is. That recording with the guitarist Zoran Dukic, and the one I've mentioned this before. The one thing that I think is wrong with these caprichos is the music is too beautiful to really fit the dark, sometimes grotesque, bizarre, almost nightmarish qualities of Goya's etchings, which are also known, I believe, as caprichos. But at any rate, that is the music that Castelnuovo wrote, so we're working with it, and we're going to hear one more of the caprichos in a minute. Let's see, I have to do weather and road stuff here, so pardon me. Well, I think we're going to skip the roads today, just for time reasons. Because you know what kind of conditions to expect out there. Let's do just the weather, and let's see. Yesterday's low, -1.8. The high made it up to +2.2. Currently, the temperature is about 3 degrees. Environment Canada telling us we'll have showers today, amounts of 10 millimeters over southern sections, which I take to mean probably between here and Lytton. Snow level at 900 meters, wind from the south at 40 kilometers per hour, gusting to 60, a high today of 8. Tonight, cloudy with a 60% chance of showers this evening, then partly cloudy, snow level at 900 meters, wind from the south at 40 kilometers per hour, gusting to 60, diminishing to 20 late this evening, a low of +2. Saturday, a mixture of sun and cloud, wind from the south, yes, I did say sun, wind from the south at 30 kilometers per hour in the afternoon, a high tomorrow of +5. Sunday, sunny with a low of -1, a high of +3, and it looks like, a minor cooling. No, it's not even a cooling trend after that. It's just going to stay kind of around the same. Monday, cloudy with a low of 0, a high of +2, and then after that, it looks like temperatures kind of warming back up a little bit, but not that much. We will take a look at conditions across the country and around the province, if I can find what I'm looking for here. Hey, I got it. Starting in St. John's, Newfoundland, the temperature is 8 degrees, mostly cloudy there. In Halifax, it is mainly sunny and 8. Montreal is mostly cloudy and 8 as well. Toronto, 11 degrees and light rain. In Iqaluit, -5. Winnipeg has light snow at -10. In Saskatoon, -17 and mostly cloudy. And I should just mention Regina. They are the coldest place on my list of Canadian cities at -22 with fog. Yellowknife has light snow at -16. In Edmonton, it is clear at -11. Yeah, +11, that would be news. Calgary, -7 and mostly cloudy. Whitehorse, there you are, light snow at -14. Prince George is at 2 degrees and clear. A little closer to home in Clinton, it is -1 with light snow. Hope has light rain at 4 degrees, in Kamloops 6 degrees and cloudy, 0 degrees in Pemberton, and in Vancouver, light drizzle and 7 degrees. Our internet is back up. I thought I was going to have to make up a temperature for Vancouver this morning, but as it turns out, I did not. All right, that's the weather. The roads, go to drivebc.ca if you want to get the information there yourself. Sorry, just no time to fit everything in. So, Sarah, now I'm done with all those things. Many listeners have probably heard of restorative justice. Some of them may have an idea of what the basic concept of it behind it is. But for those who do not, can you give us a kind of a quick rundown?
I think to put it simply, restorative justice is a form of justice seeking that focuses on harm done and on who has been affected by the harm done and what needs to happen to restore, to repair the damage and restore the relationship.
So it is essentially a significant alternative to simply punitive forms of justice that is what is largely practiced now, at least in Canada and the U.S., right?
That's right. It's restorative and not retributive.
Right. But it can, in many forms, and obviously depending on the crime, that does not mean that the restorative justice does not involve prison time for people, for criminals. That may not be a specific element of a restorative justice plan, but it does happen. And restorative justice is kind of something that's on top of that to try and help out both victim and perpetrator. Is that the idea?
I think we could look at actually restorative practices, mm-hmm. because they occur along a spectrum from a small conversation between students in the hallway at school to sort out a problem,
right,
all the way to victim-offender dialogue between perpetrators of severe crime and extreme political violence and the persons who have been affected by them.
I'm sure you know about this, and you probably will know more of the details. I heard an interview on CBC earlier this year, last year, with the daughter of a man who was killed in a bombing that was carried out by IRA supporters. And she and the man who carried out the bombing had met and discussed the issues around it, had discussed what it meant to each of them, how it affected them, and actually it was on the CBC that I heard the two of them interviewed at the same time. Did you happen to hear that interview, or at least you know a little more about
this? I did
this,
not, but I've seen a 90-minute video.
Okay.
I studied victim-offender dialogue with Mark Umbright at the University of Minnesota for an intense week a couple of years ago, and the encounter between those two, the ongoing relationship between those two, was part of what we studied at that time.
Well, and they themselves are now advocates for restorative justice as well, as I understand. I mean, not just through interviews, but going out and speaking to various groups and that sort of thing.
That's right. And much like Katie Hutchison, they sometimes travel together and appear together.
Tell us who Katie Hutchison is.
Katie Hutchison came to Lillooet, I think, 3 years ago. Her husband was murdered in Squamish. Mm-hmm. By a young man several years ago. It took the police a few years to identify the killer, and he did his time. His name is Ryan, I think. He did his time, and Katie, at the very beginning, as soon as he was caught, Katie wanted to meet this person, to tell him what it meant to her and her children to lose her husband in this way, and to understand what he was thinking at the time that he did this. And so she had a relationship with him throughout his incarceration and afterwards, and they have traveled together and spoken of the healing benefits of restorative practices, even in cases of serious crime like a murder.
These are examples that kind of make your, I don't know if they make the hair stand up on the back of your neck, or they make your heart swell or something, but these are extraordinary people that we're talking about here, aren't we? This takes a lot of courage for both parties involved.
They're extraordinary people. It's an extraordinary process, and it's not for everyone.
Right. Okay. That's very interesting, and thank you. We're going to have some more music now, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the events that you've been doing, particularly in the schools this week, Sarah.
Great, thanks.
Okay, so let's go back to the Caprichos of Francisco Goya. I have talked more than I should have about these already, but I'm just going to tell you this one is called They Are Hot. And the etching in particular by Goya shows a group of friars, monks, living a very comfortable life. And they have food in front of them, and they are looking, they have very gluttonous looking faces. They're fat, they're comfortable, and they are looking like they are greedy for even more. So another example of the kind of injustice that Goya was railing against. Here once again is guitarist Zoran Dukic. That was music by Mario Castelnuovo Tedesco. Yes, it's so much fun having another person here at this hour of the morning. We were listening to Capriccio number 7 by Castelnuovo Tedesco, that one called They Are Hot. I'm done enough about it. Zoran Dukic was the guitarist. All right, before we go on with our talk about restorative justice, let me tell you what's coming up today on Radio Lillooet. Later this afternoon, I'm still hoping to bring you Democracy Now! One day this week. We've been out of luck every day because of internet problems. I haven't been able to get access to the studio computer from home to get Democracy Now! Either downloaded or on the air in time. Currently, our internet is working. Let's hope it stays that way. Maybe I will bring it to you this afternoon between 3 and 4. You'll have to tune in to find out. Later tonight, 8 until 10 p.m. is The Collection with your host, Sheila Simpson. And on the weekend, don't forget, Sundays at noon, you can hear Fusion Cafe with your host, Jason McLeod. And immediately after that, 1 until 2 p.m., the Putumayo World Music Hour. All right. Carrying on. Now, Sarah, you've been in the schools this week. Is that right?
Yes, we have.
You've been covering all the schools or just certain grades? Or
we have covered all the schools.
Fantastic. And what kind of events have you been doing with the students?
We've done an interactive workshop. Our partner this year, we're blessed with this, is the Department of Fisheries and Oceans. The theme of Restorative Justice Week is Diverse Needs, Unique Responses, which speaks to the flexibility of restorative practices and their application in many situations. So our steering committee, which meets 3 times a year, thought that it would be great if we could partner with another agency. DFO is on our steering committee, mm-hmm. and they volunteered to partner with us to look at the potential for restorative practices to address harms against nature.
Excellent.
So we went into the schools with a participatory workshop for kids. To explain a little bit about what restorative justice is, we began by asking the children what they thought justice is, what they understood restorative justice to be. And then we also asked them to tell us how nature can be harmed. What is nature?
Just keep going there, Sarah, and I'll deal with the phone.
What is nature? How can nature be harmed? And children are very wise. They understand a lot about nature, who it is, who it involves. And after we explored the children's knowledge of these topics, we then had an activity for them. We had a series of photographs laminated that kids could hang around their necks, showing animals that swim in the Fraser. We had the otter, the loon, the duck, the wood duck. We had a sea turtle thinking about the mouth of the Fraser. We had a grizzly bear and her cub thinking about the diversity of wildlife that actually may swim in the river, use the river for food, live in the river. And children chose, kids volunteered to be leaders of these animal families, mm-hmm. and other children joined them. And then we asked them to imagine that they were swimming around the Fraser River, doing whatever that animal would do. And we had them in a contained area, a circle among the chairs. And they were swimming and playing and imagining, and we crept upon them with a net, a ghost net that has been retrieved from the banks of the Fraser River, and we wrapped this net around them. Some escaped, some did not escape. They had this experience of being this animal and being caught in a net that was left adrift. And then we debriefed it after that.
Very cool.
How did you feel when you were swimming in the river? How did you feel when you saw suddenly there was a net there? How did you feel? What did you think when you were caught in the net?
Right.
And they expressed very evocatively how they experienced this. And then we had a mock restorative justice forum. So one of us volunteered to be the owner of the net, and we invented a story about how it came to be either left on the banks or cut free from our boat. Or we pointed out this is an international phenomenon of nets that mm-hmm. are broken away or let go or left below high water line that get carried away, and
right.
how they will fish for years and years and years until they are so weighted down by animals that they'll sink to the bottom. And then the animals that they have trapped and who have died in them will decompose, rot, the net will float again, and it will hunt and it will fish again. And so they had a lot to say to the owner of the net, and they were very constructive about the kind of agreement they would like to see to prevent mm-hmm. this from happening in the future.
Yes.
And to restore the relationship with the community, the other fishermen, and the animals.
Now, we've got somebody waiting on the line to talk here. Toby, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Jeff.
Oh, and we can hear you just beautifully. That's fantastic.
Cool.
The technology is working.
It's awesome.
Even better, the announcer seems to be actually working here. The host seems to have things working. But, Sarah, I just wanted to pick up on one thing there. And sorry, Toby, you're not going to be able to converse directly with Sarah when we talk to you. But, Sarah, what I wanted to ask you was, it seems to me students, these people, young people these days, sort of like you might be preaching to the choir in the schools, and I mean that in a good sense, because it seems to me that especially young people these days are tuned in to at least aspects of the natural world, of ecology, of environmental concerns. Is that right?
They are very wise.
Yeah.
And they are very thoughtful, and I'm very impressed with the quality of knowledge and the extent of knowledge of all the kids that we spoke to from kindergarten to grade 12.
That's fantastic. All right, now
I hear Sarah perfectly. It's great.
That's excellent. The only problem is she can't hear you, so it'll be a kind of a 2.5-sided conversation. So, Toby, welcome to Snooze Button. Thank you very much for phoning us. You're not actually that close to us right now, are you?
No, I'm in Peterborough, Ontario, so it's really fun for me to be so far away but be able to have some participation in Lilouette's Restorative Justice Week.
Well, we appreciate you doing so very, very much. Just tell us, what's important about this to you?
Well, I got involved because I've been working with young people who had been in conflict with the law, so to speak, and I just was so kind of disappointed with how the courts deal with young people, and I just felt like, okay, they are getting consequences, but they're not getting what actually happened.
Right.
You know, it's not really making an impact. And what I have seen from restorative justice circles is it really gives whoever it is who's done something wrong, it gives them the opportunity to own up to it.
Yes.
And make amends. And so they're empowered. And they can feel really forgiven. So especially for young people, but for anybody, to have that opportunity to really make a change is so, like, that's what it really inspires me. And then
yes.
It sort of goes on from there.
Well, it seems to me that many people, many criminals or perpetrators or whatever you want to call them who get involved in this have a very positive response to it. Is that your experience?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still finishing my training. I think I've been involved in about 5 or 6 circles now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've heard stories a little bit about some of the other ones in the world. And, yeah, I think it's a really positive experience for people who have done something wrong. Because it's not only, I just wanted to make the point that it's not only used when someone is going through a court
right.
thing, like anyone in the community, if they have a conflict, as long as a person is willing to say, yes, I've done something wrong, I would like to participate in this circle, then a circle can happen, whether the police are involved or not.
That's a really important point, that it has a much broader application than just
yeah.
within the criminal justice system.
Yeah,
that there
but
are,
in the
yeah.
case also, it's really important to note that in criminal cases, a lot of times the victims are much happier in a restorative process as well. They feel more heard, like they get to talk right from the beginning.
Right. Well,
and
we hear over and over, certainly from the Harper government, as we're supposed to call them, about victims' rights. So to what extent what's your sense, and Sarah may call on you to jump in on here on this as well, what's your sense in terms of the openness on the part of upper levels of government that deal with criminal justice? How are they responding to the movement for restorative justice?
Well, I'm sure that Sarah can answer that more fully, but I did want to say one little thing, just that, like, I think there's different things happening in different levels of government
right.
all over the place. So what's happening federally, Sarah would have to speak to, but in British Columbia, for instance, the Ministry of Environment has very much embraced using restorative justice circles. They call them Community Environmental Justice Forums.
Mm-hmm.
And they've even had one where in Trail, I can't remember the name of the company, but they did a big chemical spill
right.
in the Columbia River.
Right, yes.
And it was that conflict was solved in our RJ circle.
Okay, Sarah, do you want to jump in here on that involvement?
It would be
I regret that I am unable to hear what Toby
level.
Has said. But what I will say is that Restorative Justice Week continues to be sponsored by Corrections Canada,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
and they continue to partner with communities to sponsor the National Restorative Justice Symposium, which
mm-hmm.
happens during this week. So I think there is interest. I think there is cautious interest, perhaps. At the British Columbia level, we're just having a complete justice review that was mounted by Jeffrey Coper and is now being reviewed by the government. And Teo Gavrioides, I hope I got that right, is a human rights educator and scholar who has been here about 3 times this year to BC to meet with government. He's part of a lecture series happening at Simon Fraser University this week called City Talks.
Oh.
And I think the British Columbia government is very interested in restorative justice. We have more community programs than any other province here. And it's my hope that the federal government is looking at this with an open mind and an open heart. They are continuing to support it.
Well,
that's
yes, the mere fact that they are supporting and promoting Restorative Justice Week alone is that's significant, and I think they do deserve credit for that, and signals some interest, I think, in the matter on their part, and that's very welcome. Yes, Sarah. Go ahead.
And I would like to add that our program is funded by the province of British Columbia with support also from the District of Lillooet. And that's sound government commitment.
Exactly. No, for sure. I think that's great. Mm-hmm. Toby, anything else you want to add?
I'm trying to think.
Were you involved in any of the programs going on this week, or have you been out of Lillooet all this, for this
week? Unfortunately, I had planned to be, but I had to leave because of family matters.
Okay,
but,
yeah.
So I haven't been there for all of it, but my cookies will be there later this afternoon at our Just Desserts table, where people will be, people from the Restorative Justice Program will be giving away nice treats for the holidays and to help educate people about our program here in Lillooet.
Now, where will that event be?
That's going to be over at the mall outside the grocery, Bilo grocery store.
Okay, and Cheryl, what the event that's taking place this afternoon outside the Bilo, what time is that?
We're having a Just Desserts table from 2 until 6.
Okay, we'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes and other things.
I just wanted to say one last thing before I'll go and let you guys carry on. Maybe I'll get on the internet and see if I can find you to listen to the rest of this.
Oh, sorry, we don't have live streaming, but you know what?
I am recording
the broadcast, Toby, so you'll be able to hear it after the fact.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that to me, you know, just what Sarah said, that our program in Lillooet is community supported. And
right.
That's one of the things that makes restorative justice very strong. Like, this work can go on when it's supported by the communities.
Yes.
And it really is. And so...
It's
neat because it's also tailored and specific to each community and the, you know, the culture and the real things that are happening in our home. So I think that's one of the real strengths of the process and the program. So,
absolutely. Well, in a country that is so regionally divided in so many different ways, that's the flexibility of restorative justice programs is a very valuable part of it that I think probably helps to make it work for so many different people in so many different situations.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot, Jeff, for giving us your airtime, and I look forward to seeing you when I get home.
Okay, it's been my pleasure. We thank you for talking to us, Toby, and safe travels home.
Yeah, thanks. Give my farewell to Sarah there and everybody else.
I will do. Thank you. That was Toby Mueller joining us from Toronto, and we're very glad that, or from Peterborough, sorry, we're very glad she was able to join us talking about restorative justice. About time we had some more music here on Snooze Button, which is absolutely flying by. We're going to turn now to music by Richard Wagner. There are issues. Wagner has issues that have to be dealt with, particularly regarding his anti-Semitism. And, it's not his fault that he became a favorite of Adolf Hitler, although the anti-Semitism certainly may have helped. But we're going to listen to music from The Ring of the Nibelungen, from one of the operas, Siegfried. The Ring of the Nibelungen is a set of four operas by Richard Wagner. And restorative justice is one of the themes of it. In fact, a very literal form of restorative justice plays an important part in the story when the Rhine gold is stolen by the evil dwarf Alberich from the Rhine maidens very early in the first opera. And then at the end of the fourth opera, the concluding opera, the ring of power that has been fashioned from the Rhine gold is returned back to the Rhine maidens. But one of the primary themes that runs all through the Ring of the Nibelungen has to do with power and the price of power, the fact that there is a cost to gaining power, and that cost can be very high sometimes and is sometimes higher than the person who pays it, who sets off on that path. It's a higher price than they mean to pay. And tying it all into the nature theme that Sarah was mentioning earlier, nature runs through much of the ring cycle as well. So we're going to listen to the Forest Murmurs section that comes from the opera Siegfried. This is great music for people who absolutely loathe Richard Wagner. There's no singing, no sopranos in big breastplates with horns on their heads or anything like that. Just some lovely and very soothing orchestral music. We'll listen to a recording with the Berlin Philharmonic, and the conductor is Klaus Tinstedt. who says Wagner needs to be big and heavy. We've just been listening to the Forest Murmurs section that comes from the opera Siegfried by Wagner from the big, 14-hour-long set of operas, four operas that comprise Der Ring des Nibelungen. That recording with the Berlin Philharmonic, the conductor was Klaus Tennstedt. It is 8:40 here, and let's see, in the studio with me is Sarah Chandler. We're going to be talking a little bit more about restorative justice. Sorry, I got Sarah to, I faked her out. I got her to lean towards the microphone there. I do have a few public service announcements I have to do before we carry on, and we have more music for you as well. Let's see, coming up this weekend is the annual Christmas Tea and Bazaar of the United Church Women. That is on Saturday the 24th, 1 until 3:30 p.m. in the United Church Hall. $5 per person for tea will automatically enter you into the door prize draw, and for children 10 years and younger, it is $3 for tea. They'll also have the second edition of the United Church Women and Friends cookbook there, the bake table, and I've said it before, I'll say it again, some of the best bakers in the world live in Lillooet. Needlework table, novelties table, touch and take table, all that sort of stuff. Again, 1 until 3:30 p.m. tomorrow in St. Andrew's United Church Hall. Let's see, the coaching clinic and soccer skills camp is going on here at the rec center on the weekend. Saturday, tomorrow, is the basic coaching clinic, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. It applies to all sports. And then Sunday, 9 until 3 p.m., is the soccer skills camp designed to help you get the most out of your game, and that boys and girls ages 7 and up of all skills are welcome to that. If you are would like to attend this, it is free, but they ask that you register so that they have some idea of how many people are involved. So if you'd like more information or would like to register, get in touch with Roger Adolph at 256-9474. And that is the number to talk to for getting involved in either of those clinics that are going on this weekend. Let's see, on Wednesday of next week is a concert by the Fountain View Academy Orchestra and Choir, O Holy Night, they're calling it. That'll be at 7 p.m. November the 28th. It is here at the Rec Center. You may have seen that advertised at other venues elsewhere, but it is going to be at the Rec Center. Admission is free, but the concert is benefiting the Lillooet Food Bank, so food items will be collected at the door. And finally, a reminder that the screening mammography mobile unit will be visiting Lillooet Interior Health Unit December 10th and 11th. Women between the ages of 40 and 79 can arrange a free mammogram. No doctor's referral needed. The appointment takes about 15 minutes. And there's a special number to call for that. Also a website you can visit. I'll give the number twice. The number is 1-800-663-9203. The website, www.smpbc.ca, and the number once again, 1-800-663-9203. Do not phone the health unit. They can't make the booking for that appointment for you. All right, just pardon me one second. Just having to wheel around the studio here and move things. That's it for the public service announcements. Sarah, let's get back to talking about restorative justice. We have talked a little about the use of restorative justice within the criminal justice system. Have there been studies to show something, a trend regarding recidivism among people who are involved in restorative justice programs?
Just for our audience, recidivism is repeat offending.
Oh, and sorry. Yes, thank you. Yeah.
If they've done it and they've gone through a restorative justice program, will they do it again? Recidivism after restorative justice is lower in most cases than it is in the court system. I was reading something recently that's saying that isn't necessarily true for youth, that recidivism levels are about the same. I think our dear colleague, Edith Fortier, who works in the Kamloops Rural Detachment and is one of our trainers and mentors, is right when she says, with kids, sometimes it takes more than once before the penny drops.
Well, I mean, any parent knows that too.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes, I mean, yeah, so. Kids are persons in formation.
Yeah.
And they're always asking questions. They're always experimenting. They're, you know, they've got hormonal changes, brain development issues.
Exactly.
And stuff happens.
Being a teenager is hell. I mean, we all know this.
Yeah. I'll second that.
It puts you through a lot, and not to excuse anyone's behavior, but it is sort of human nature that things are more apt to happen in those years probably than in other years. Nevertheless, I think it's great that the young people in Lillooet, and I assume in many schools across Canada during this Restorative Justice Week, are being introduced to these basic concepts. And I think obviously certainly in BC, but across Canada, awareness of issues like bullying has gone up hugely, and that awareness obviously not applying merely to the parents of children in schools, but to the children themselves.
Well, that's one of the issues that I feel really passionate about and concerned about, is that there are anti-bullying initiatives being developed to specifically target bullying behavior. But what we have found is that a grounding in human dignity and the things that support human dignity, a grounding in human rights, actually goes a long way to address not only bullying but all other kinds of harmful behavior. Mm-hmm. And we would rather see, and human rights and restorative justice are closely related, although the light isn't shone on that very
right.
often.
Yeah.
Because restorative justice respects the human dignity of everyone involved and works to build and restore relationships and restore harmony, and helps communities understand the underlying causes of crime and harm in our community as well. And so by going into the schools and doing our Play It Fair and Speaking Rights program, we're giving kids a grounding in human rights values that helps them to appreciate each other, that gives them tools to communicate to each other with, and gives them an understanding when their dignity is not respected, that it isn't being respected, and that they have the right to have it respected. It gives them some ideas about what they can do when their rights, when their dignity is not being respected. And by learning about those things, they also come to understand that if these rights exist, and we all have them, they can only be protected if we all have the responsibility to do that.
Everybody plays by the same rules, exactly.
That's right. Yeah, it empowers right. Yeah. people to do that, yeah. to understand why.
Well, and I think that even just being introduced to these concepts at a young age would put a seed in the mind of a young person who might have circumstances or a personality that would incline them towards being a bully. At least it puts something there that makes them, that they're aware of. They can't ignore that idea has been put in their head, having to do with human rights and, as you say, most importantly, that concept of the dignity that is due to every single person.
Well, and the other thing that happens with that is when someone behaves in a bully-like way, in a restorative justice process, we're going to ask them what happened and what they were thinking at the time. We're going to ask them to tell their story. And often, in the telling of the story, we find out that the bullying didn't start with the bully.
Hmm. Interesting.
The bully learned it somewhere.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
So people who bully are often victims.
Yes, themselves.
Before
right.
of other situations.
Right.
And that's one of the things that troubles me, is when we have somebody in a restorative justice process and we're asking them to be accountable for their behavior, we learn their story and we learn that there are people who have treated them badly
right.
who are not being held accountable. And I feel pain when I feel that somebody has to be accountable and the person who has hurt them is not being held accountable to them.
It is, I guess, one of the ugly truths of human existence that we have these chains, these links of injustice that are passed down either generationally or from person to person in some other way. But yes, that someone can be a bad guy, but also the need to recognize that they themselves have also been a victim at some point, and
yes.
that they need to be a recipient of restorative justice as well in order for full healing to take place.
We also find that harmful behavior is inadvertent. When someone does something, usually in their heart or in their mind, they have a good reason for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to do something that for them is a good thing.
Right.
The other implications of that haven't occurred to them.
Right, right.
So yeah. by having this conversation, they can think more deeply about what happened and its impact on other people. And sometimes just, people are quite surprised.
Yeah, the sheer awareness of the concept of empathy and the importance that ultimately plays, I think, as we get older or as we move into adult life at any rate, that becomes an essential part of everybody's life in order to, it's just part, it's almost part of our social lubrication, is some degree of empathy with others around us, greater or lesser, but at least an awareness of it is very important. All right, now we're going to, I don't have any music about bullying. If I had really thought about it, I probably could have come up with some. But Sarah was talking about the Department of Fisheries and Oceans involvement in Restorative Justice Week here in Lillooet earlier in the show. And so we're going to have some music to celebrate the Department of Fisheries and Oceans now. We're going to listen to the Moldau, a symphonic poem by Bedřich Smetana. I apologize for my pronunciation of the R with the hot check over it in Bedřich's first name. I've been told that even many Czech people have difficulty pronouncing that R correctly. This is a symphonic poem that portrays a very important river in Czechoslovakia. The Moldau is what it's known in known as in German. Vltava is the name of the river in Czechoslovakian. And I think that's all I need to tell you about it. Sarah, anything you want to say about this piece? Because you know this, right? You must know the Moldau, right?
In a past life, was a piano teacher. My students would listen to this, and my music studio overlooks the Fraser River. So we would listen to the Moldau, watching the river, and the music in the Moldau depicts the scenes that are happening on the riverbank as the river flows by.
Yes, it's as if you were on a barge moving past on the river, moving past various scenes. So there's a bit of a country dance at one point. I think there's a wedding celebration. There's a more majestic part that represents a very important castle. I think it's called the Vyšehrad. I'm not sure that's a castle that overlooks the river in Prague. And the music, the main theme of this is just so evocative of a river and of the motion of water, isn't it?
And we, at one point, we took a busload of kids down to hear the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra play the Moldau at the Orpheum Theater. And as we were coming home by bus, we were driving up the Fraser, right?
Yes.
And so it was a wonderful opportunity for kids to think about all the things that were happening on the shore as we went along.
Well, and something else that strikes me about this piece, it seems, and maybe it's because people have kind of heard it, you know, 30 years ago and forgotten it, but there's something about this piece that it seems like even if you've never heard it before, it strikes some kind of a chord of almost archetypal memory in the soul. All right, let's listen to the Cleveland Orchestra, and the conductor is George Sell. Very famous recording of this piece.
Thank you. Thank you.
We've been listening to music by Bedřich Smetana. We heard the Moldau, Portrait of a Great River. Oh, my headphones are just acting funny. I thought that maybe my microphone wasn't working, but no, it's just the headphones, so won't worry about it. That recording, there, now they're working again. The Cleveland Orchestra with director George Sell. Now let's see, we are going to give Sarah a final few words here in a few minutes, but that is basically it for Snooze Button. If you missed the weather forecast at the top of the show, I wanted to give you a quick recap for today and the weekend. Environment Canada telling us today we'll have showers, amounts of up to 10 millimeters over southern sections, and a high today of 8. Tonight, cloudy, a 60% chance of showers this evening, then becoming partly cloudy, snow level dropping to 900 meters, and a low tonight of plus 2. Tomorrow, a mixture of sun and cloud and a high of plus 5. Sunday, sunny with a low of minus 1 and a high of plus 3. Sarah, thank you very much for having been our guest here on Snooze Button. This has been a great deal of fun.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And there are people you would like to thank, I think, involved with the Restorative Justice Program as well.
There are. While Toby and I are just two voices, we'd like the community to know that there are a number of people on our steering committee. We have a strong facilitation team. And I want to particularly thank Tom Grantham for freeing up Eric Zimmerman to go to the schools with me. I want to thank my loving partner, Trevor Chandler, and Kevin Duncan from the Inuktitut Nation Tribal Council, who came to school with us yesterday to help facilitate our activity. I would also like the community to know that we chose the Ghost Net harm against nature as, just because it's one we can do in a group. There are many harms against nature that we talked about, mm-hmm. harms to water, harms to land, harms to animals, plants. We talked about it all, but we chose one that we could actually do with kids on the spot. And I want to thank School District 74 for housing us and allowing us to come in and work with kids and teachers and administrators. It's been a really fabulous partnership, and we appreciate it a lot. And we appreciate Radio Lillooet for inviting us in.
Thank you, Sarah. I appreciate your having come in. And next year, we will be in touch about this sooner than we were this year. And we'll see, maybe we can get somebody else to come forward and be another voice on the subject of restorative justice. I would love for us to be able to repeat this again next week, maybe next year, and maybe even have a couple of mornings a couple of shows devoted to the subject, and with all kind of wrapped around music. Thanks also to Toby Mueller for phoning us from Peterborough, all the way from Peterborough, Ontario, to be interviewed here on Radio Lillooet, and my thanks to all the technical gods or gremlins or whatever they may be that helped to make everything actually run fairly smoothly today. That's it for me and for Sarah for today. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope everyone has themselves a wonderful day. I'm going to leave you with one of my all-time favorites from our computer playlist here, Jake Shimabukuro. He is an American ukulelist, if that is such a word. He is from Hawaii, I believe. And an amazing virtuoso on his instrument. If you're curious, check him out. Shimabukuro is his last name. You figure out the spelling. Lots of videos of him available on YouTube. This is a song called Toastman's Wave.